Hi, and welcome to the final Japan Baseball Weekly podcast of 2015. It's for the week of December 21st. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me, after technical difficulties and other difficulties, is Jim Allen. What's happening, man? Good morning.
Somebody
conked me on the head there?
Yeah, it is a good morning. For the rest of the world, it appears really it's a beautiful day.
Not good for your computers. And
no, it's not. No, Mac and Skype have been fighting for the last 10 days, and they were having a little civil war, and I never even noticed.
Not Macintosh, but Mac and Skype.
Mac and Skype.
Okay, well.
Or Mac, not the Mac, you know, which is good, because
Mac and cheese often
would work. I was thinking that. I had mac and cheese when I was in Nashville. I figure I'm going to go, you know, whole hog on the barbecue. I might as well go whole hog on the dietary destruction. And then I thought, well, okay, that was fine. I don't need to do that again for another 5 years.
Okay. All right. Well, on this week's show, we've got an interview with former MLB player and manager and one-time NPB player, Charlie Manuel. And we're going to talk about a whole lot of player movement. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, I had the great pleasure of meeting Charlie Manuel for the first time, and he was
was at the winter meetings.
This is at the baseball winter meetings in Nashville, Tennessee, or I should say,
close to Nashville.
It's like in a suburb of Nashville. It's part of Nashville, but it's like on another planet, and it's called Planet Opryland, which like a spaceship landed in the middle of a strip mall, and. And you go in there, and inside it's like they've created this artificial environment with boats and trees and Christmas music. And
I think I saw that movie.
Yeah, indeed. I know. It's like Silent Running, if anyone remembers the old Bruce Dern movie. Big glass dome with plants inside. And they inhabited it with people in the form of baseball people and job seekers. And it was kind of like a science fiction movie.
Yeah, they're not really people, is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, well, it was weird. I mean, there's a lot of things that aren't real in there, but there were real baseball people, and I've always wanted to talk to Charlie Manuel. And my first day there, I heard somebody say, "Oh, I saw Charlie Manuel. Boy, he should be in baseball." And okay, now I'm on the lookout for Charlie Manuel. And on the third or the fourth day of the baseball winter meetings, I heard this Southern drawl and a big tall person talking, and I said, I asked him if it was him, and he said, yeah. And so he said, "Can you talk?" And well, asking Charlie Manuel if he can talk is like
like asking you if you can talk.
yeah. I was trying to put it somewhat more delicately than that, but yeah.
Well, you're not going to hit yourself over the head with the pan.
The handle, I might, just by accident. But yes, so he said, "Sure, I got a minute." And we had a chat about things, NPB and such. So let's hear what Mr. Manuel had to say about the old days.
When I first got there, when I first landed, I was kind of petrified because I would get off the plane, and they took me in a room, and the lights were kind of cut down, and they had all these press guys in there.
Oh, yeah. At the airport.
Yeah, and they had all these cameras. And I wasn't used to that because I wasn't a big star in the big leagues. And, you know, like I'd been like a pinch hitter and a utility player and things like that. And it was completely different. And I didn't know how to act. They had my number up there and my name on the back of a uniform. Wow. And they were, it was kind of like they already have me as a star and I hadn't got a hit yet.
So how about your preconceptions of Japan? I mean, obviously, you know, we all have to do it.
We all have to have an image. Right. I thought, actually, when I first went there, you know, like, I didn't realize, I knew it was an island, and I didn't know they had, the land was as pretty and beautiful as it was. Okay. And things like that. As far as that goes, the agriculture part of it was surprising to me because everything was kind of clean and the things that they did and you know like in just the layout of the country in the seasons.
Okay.
You know, like all that was different from what I anticipated. I anticipated like a year-round, you know, warmer weather. And I didn't know they had like four seasons, and also up north it was cold and things like that. But of course, I wasn't used to the bullet trains and the travel and things like that, and that was different for me. But as far as the baseball goes, I'd been in touch with teams and saw Japanese teams come to our spring trainings and play.
Who were you with in the States at Victory?
I was with the Twins and the Dodgers.
Right.
And things like that.
The Giants came with the Dodgers in maybe 1975,
I remember. Yeah, I mean, I played against the Giants when I was with the Twins.
Oh, okay.
Oh, hit a couple home runs against us that day. Nakashima hit one, too. But at the same time, I visualized, you know, kind of being what the baseball was.
Because you'd seen a little bit of the style the way they played.
Their attendance was big.
Yeah.
And very popular, still is.
Yeah.
And, you know, like that was kind of what I wanted or liked. But then probably the hardest part was the culture and getting to know their their lifestyle and a lot to do with their thinking, but it didn't take me long.
Right. How about the adjustments you had to make to your swing or to the your approach, more than the swing, but your approach?
I think I had to really learn to hit there. I think that I had to, first of all, I saw better command.
Right.
I saw better command even at the major when I played in the major leagues. When I first went to Japan, I think the pitchers have better command of the strike zone,
especially the secondary pitches.
Exactly. Yeah. And they threw a lot of secondary pitches. They kind of at one time, there was hard throwers in Japan, and people don't realize that. But as a whole, probably the majority of percentage would be as high of saw. They pitch what I call backwards.
Right, right.
They utilize the strike zone by starting slow and finishing you off hard.
Okay.
And things like that. But that took a while.
Get ahead in the count and it's breaking ball, breaking. Or get it behind in the count and it's breaking ball, breaking ball, breaking ball.
Right. Strike zone was a little different.
Sure.
But at the same time, I think as time goes on, you got to learn that. Yeah. I liked it right from the start, really. And I didn't do too good at the start, but then later on, I think that when I learned to play there, I slowed myself down, and I really concentrated on playing baseball.
Now, the first time I ever heard your name was in 1986. I had a student, English student, who had been going to dental school near Jingu Stadium in 1978.
Yeah, right.
And he said, "Yeah, Manuel." I don't know any guy named Manuel. And he said, but tell me about playing for Hiraoka.
Yeah, right.
He was a bit of a hard ass.
He was he was what you call a like a hard and I think that he expected a lot out of American players.
Right.
And it took me a while to get to know him. And matter of fact, I had some Japanese reporters come to my house about a month ago, and a lot of they asked me a lot about Hiraoka, and this is I'll tell you the same thing I told them. I didn't really realize it till later on, but to me, Hiroka was a perfectionist.
Oh yeah.
He always recognized and give me credit for being a good hitter, but he thought my defense and things like that. He wanted me to be able to do the whole thing, and really one of the biggest reasons I went there is because I had a bad ankle, and I could still play. And I don't know if you remember or not, but I did hurt my ankle, and then they operated on it, and where I'd broken it before, the Japanese they scraped the top of my leg and did some and restructured my left ankle for me, and I got to a place where I could run better.
Wow!
But Hiroka, he was a guy who he wanted you to make limited mistakes, and he wanted everyone on his team to be the perfect players. And which was a good way.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, that's very demanding, but at the same time too, it's also a great way to produce a winner. That's kind of like excellence and master of the game will produce success.
Okay.
And that's how you stay good for a long time.
Did Japan make you a better player?
Yeah, without a doubt. Japan made me a better player because it made me more dedicated, and their work ethic I liked when somebody made me do things.
Yeah.
And but also, too, their culture and their style of life, you know, like it taught me that there was more people in the world than just Charlie Manuel. That it actually kind of taught me to respect other people around me.
I've heard that quite a bit. Although a lot of the players who, now you've seen this. I mean, you were one of the guys who, you know, in that first, second, third wave of foreign players who came over there, minor league success stories who didn't make the adjustment at the major league level but made it in Japan.
Yeah.
And now the attitude of the new guys going over is, I want to minor leagues. Forget this stuff. I want to play in Japan.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, first of all, I think Japanese baseball. When I was a player there, I used to look at it, and I didn't give it enough credit. You know, like I thought, you know, like Major League Baseball was such more advanced. But when I came back here to the States, and of course I started working and I started managing in the minor leagues and stuff, I saw how, I come to realize how good Japanese baseball actually was.
Let me ask about that, because that's a big thing. I mean, because you came back and you went into coaching and managing.
Right.
What did you learn in Japan that you could apply to that when you think back to your lessons? And
I would say work ethic.
Okay.
And the training part. And that's the discipline part.
All right.
And
you demanded that of your players.
I think it made me a better player and everything like that, but also it made me feel better about myself.
Okay.
And when someone tells you to me now in the States, like when I have a player, say like a Chase Utley or Roy Holiday.
Right. You got a 30?
In their work ethic, in their work ethic, and their dedication, and their conditioning, and things like that mean so much to them because they feel like that they're stronger and better, and it gives them more confidence at everything they do.
Okay,
does that make sense?
It makes sense.
I didn't realize that, but that's what the Japanese kind of produced in them.
Well, thanks, Charlie. I will be calling you soon because I got more stuff, and it was good fun.
Sounded like fun.
It was. He was like going, I have a meeting at 12:30, and then I'm going 12:30, and I'm looking at my clock, my iPhone, and it's 12:30, and he's going, well, don't just ignore that. We're talking.
Don't take me literally.
I know. So what'd you think about Mr. Manuals?
Well, obviously, the first thing that struck me was, you know, all the stories you hear about Charlie Manuel and how charming and down to earth he is really come to light in this brief little chat that you had with him. He's, he's just a really nice guy.
He sounds
like that. And you can tell the managerial mind that he has, knowing that both Sada Haruo and Shigeo Nagashima homered against him in that game. He knew who both of those guys were. I mean, sometimes you hear about players and you have to think back in the 70s and 80s, but I'm thinking back mostly in the 70s, that you hear about guys and you might see them, but when you come over here for a trip, it's hard to remember who's who. You know, these guys, they don't know the names, they don't know the faces so well. So I was kind of impressed that he knew that both of those guys.
Yeah, well, on the other hand, it was something that happened. It had happened. He arrived in Japan, and here's the thing. He arrived in Japan in 76, and this happened in 75, I'm guessing. He said with the Twins, but I believe it was – but I know for – well, I take that back. Now, he said Nagashima homered, which would have meant it was 74 or earlier, and I know Charlie had played with the Twins in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been those times. I also know that the Dodgers, the Giants, trained at Vero Beach in 1975. But that was Nagashima's first year as a manager, so that wouldn't have been it. But he was familiar with them, obviously, because he was with the Dodgers at that time.
Mm. All right, but I guess the biggest thing, or the thing that really struck me or knocked me down, is you hear the same exact thing we still hear today from players who come to Japan. Essentially, no fastball counts, great control by the Japanese pitchers, which kind of makes me wonder, is there some kind of disconnect from the guys who have played here in Japan and go back to the States and discuss baseball in Japan to guys who are thinking about coming? I mean, because why am I still hearing about this? You know, Charlie Manuel, who we always hear has been a great hitting instructor for, mm-hmm. for big league players, especially, I guess the biggest one was Manny Ramirez that we heard him talk about.
Okay.
The explanation of how guys work here and how pitchers work and the command. And then he says guys could throw hard, and they had guys who could really throw hard, but that they would start you off soft and pitch backwards. And I'm like, why are guys still coming over here in 2015 and not knowing this when Charlie Manuel was here in the 70s and or late 70s and 80s? And he's bringing this information. We know how good a hitting coach he is, or how good a hitter. And I mean, he really hit well here in Japan.
Mm, he did.
So I don't get it.
I think it's, you know, I've thought about that too. And I think it's one of these things, like, and I get this sense from when I talk to players, you know it because you've heard it, but until you've lived it, it doesn't mean anything.
That's exactly, yeah. Yeah.
And my analogy is when I go back to the States and I'm driving a car, and I don't even drive in Japan, but because I'm used to people driving, you know, on two lanes, you choose the left lane and you go that way. That when I'm driving a car in the States and the streets are empty,
yes,
that my inclination is to drive on the left side.
Yeah, I turned on a street one day and I literally didn't know which side to go on. So
yeah.
I understand that.
But so we know you drive on the right side in the States, but until you get, because these guys are so tuned in to, you know, you've got to automate as much as you can.
Yeah, I understand. And, you know, I'm not maybe so much talking about the physical or the muscle memory adjustments that you have to make. I think it's more the philosophical adjustments, because you still think that guys would have heard about this stuff all the time, so that they're used to it, and until they actually get in and do it, but they can't do it, but at least we don't hear this shock and awe kind of surprise that, you know, they, you know, I don't see any fastballs, or I don't get fastballs and fastball counts, and that's what I'm talking about.
You still see, I hear it every month.
Yeah, and so here's a guy who played a long time ago, and the philosophy is different, and we know it. So I mean, we've got to get some form of communication that's a little bit better, and that's what kind of stuck out to me. I guess that's what shocked me in this interview, because
I think you know, more international play will change that when, you know, people get used to seeing. I mean, it's still a bit of a shock. You know, it's different. It's fine to understand the concept, and everybody does understand the concept. But even guys who've been here for over a year, some guys still struggle with it. You know, it's like learning a foreign. To some degree, it's like learning a foreign language.
It is a foreign language, but I really did like that he acknowledged the hard throwers here, and you know, that made it, because I think the image, or a lot of times people think, and especially with Kenta Maeda about to go over to the United States, that people think, well, he's slight of frame, he's not going to be a hard thrower, and it's not that he can't throw a decent velocity when he needs to. And it's just like Masahiro Tanaka doesn't, like, overpower guys. He throws hard when he needs to, or when he wants to use velocity to his advantage. But he doesn't sit 99.
No.
So they do have a lot of hard throwers here, and I'm glad he acknowledged that.
Yeah, well, I think, to me, the disconnect with Charlie is that he looks like the guy who should be playing every baseball manager and coach in every movie about the old days. But here he is, this a person who's talking in a very sort of humanistic way about the game. You know, he's a very, very smart guy, and that really comes out. You know, that it's sort of like he looks like a caricature of a guy who only knows about hitting a baseball because he can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a guy who communicates really, really well.
Yeah, that's something else. I mean, I've heard. I've
just okay.
heard it, since I've never spoken to him either.
I mean, he's it's almost like he thinks too fast for his mouth, because he's jumping from one idea to the next before he's finished sometimes when he got excited.
I usually talk to a guy like that during the baseball season, like once a week.
Hashtag high heat.
I have no idea who we might be speaking of, Spartacus.
But I also liked his welcome to the club, and they said, you know, they had my uniform and everything on the wall, and I hadn't even gotten a hit yet. And, you know, you can really be made to feel important here in Japan. I don't know if that's pressure. I don't know if the in society they realize that's kind of a putting a person under pressure, but making you feel important. But it feels good.
I reckon. I wouldn't know that experience too well. But, yeah, I thought about that, and I thought about Gail Hopkins told me that, you know, essentially the same story. He got off the plane and they had the press conference at the airport, and the reporters, he said the question he still remembers is, what do you think about Japanese women?
No comment.
And he said, well, you know, I don't know yet. I just got here.
they look like American women, only they're Japanese. All right.
Yeah, I wonder what I should have asked Carol that question when she was here, when they were here a couple summers ago.
That's his wife.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I got to meet them. I got to meet both he and his wife. So
that was the thing. And I guess the other one is the relationship. I've been asking. I'm pretty repetitive and predictable, so I go in these streams of I ask people the same questions over and over again, different people to gauge their answers.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the two things I asked now is, what did you bring back from Japan? I asked that to Terry Collins. I asked that to Matt Merton this past week in Nashville. You know, and they all gave me variations on the same one. Terry's was interesting. I'll throw that in here. He said, an appreciation for the single run.
Ah, that's interesting. Because, I don't think we have, and I say we as in Americans, in American baseball or baseball in the West, I don't think we appreciate getting a lead sometimes. Like, well, it's just one run.
Right.
It's, you know, one run. And I often say when my team allows the first run, well, one run is not going to win this game today. But we don't know that.
Exactly. And one of the things about that, and he said that on occasions, he did say he qualified this by saying he does it with his better pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
If one of his better pitchers has a runner on third with no outs or one out, he'll bring the infield in, and everybody's shaking their heads. And everybody's saying, no, 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 what are you doing? You're not in Japan anymore, Terry.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and he'll explain, he'll say to the pitcher, look, I believe in you. You're too good. And we're going to make these guys fight for that run. We're not going to give it up. We're not going to give up a run because you're better than that. And you deserve to have our backs.
Right.
And he said people kind of bought into it, you know, that sometimes we're going to do this and force the other guys to do something. We're not going to give up anything.
Right.
Which is a great attitude, I think, if you're a competitor. I mean, you got to be smart about it, but it was a response I never expected. Most of the time I ask people, managers and coaches, what they bring back, and they often talk about spring training organization. And then, so when I asked Terry about that, I'm sorry to be talking about Terry after the Charlie interview. When I asked Terry about that, he says, no, because I've got 7 fields in Port St. Lucie, and I only had 2 with Oryx. So I do it completely different.
Interesting.
But his thing was the one run, and Charlie's was the discipline. And I've heard that one, especially discipline in regards to learning a different hitting technique and learning to make adjustments to Japan's obsession with breaking balls.
Mm-hmm.
Has been the typical one. But anyway, it was great. Charlie was very gracious. So it was I guess my regret from the winter meetings was not getting more time to talk to Terry Whitfield. But I think he was he seemed a little reticent when I spoke to him. So I passed on that, and not having a recording for Boomer Wells, because I just passed him on the way out of the facility.
Yeah.
And and not taking photographs of these people.
Yeah, I've got to go to the winter meetings with you one time.
Well, next year is Washington.
It sounds like fun. Washington State?
D.C.
D.C. Well, yeah. we'll see. that sounds a little cold to me.
well, Nashville was wonderful, and they're about the same latitude, so that... well, I take that back. It's on the same latitude as Kentucky, so that's about a degree north.
Okay.
So, yeah. Well, anyway, so that's on my agenda for next year. It was great fun, and I'm just now sort of getting over the sleep lag from about almost nonstop baseball.
Yeah. Well, I'm about to get on the plane and have some jet lag of my own. But the other thing about the interview with Charlie was, I liked what he said, and you touched on it just a second ago when you said discipline, and you know, he said he liked having the discipline of having to be a two-way player and having to focus on being perfect. And I thought that was a lot of times we take that for granted, that sometimes in the especially in the West, but you know, if you have a really good bat, they'll find a place for you to play defense, but you don't have to be perfect, and you have to work on it, of course. But having somebody demand that you be perfect and work on it and get better at it, in addition to being good on the other side, whether you're a really good defensive player and your bat is behind, or whether you're a good offensive player and your defense is behind, you've got to work to get better and improve, and that's what Japan teaches you to focus on. I think a lot of times we'll see players here, and you know, we understand that they're not good defensive players, but you see that they're excelling on the offensive side, so they still won't find a place for you until you can really play enough defense to you know, not let the team down in big situations.
Well, another manager, major league manager, who played in Japan, and there have been there've probably been a dozen of them by now, is Andy Green, of the new manager of the San Diego Padres. And we spoke about that briefly. My colleagues at Kyoto were very generous and let me have the Kyoto ticket to the manager's luncheon. And at the manager's luncheon, there are 31 tables. There's one table for people who don't have any place to sit. And then there's one table for each team, essentially each team's beat writer.
Okay.
Which means, if you're going to the Mets, you know, I interviewed Terry before we went into the lunch, and they have a little reception, and we were talking there, and that's right at the interview. And then when he went in, he says, "I got to be with my guys." And I went, "Your guys? I'm going the same place." He says, "No, my guys, my beat writers, who are going to be at my table." And for the Yankees and the Mets, it means they got to bring up extra chairs.
Yeah.
So I was looking around and I'm going, Andy Green. Well, there's a talk about Matsuda, and I don't know who this guy is, and I don't know much about the San Diego Padres. Then I like the ballpark, and so on and so on. So I go to Andy Green, and he says, "Hi, Jim." I go, "What's up with that?" And
you're famous.
Well, actually, he didn't. I'll sort of rephrase. He didn't say "Hi, Jim," but suddenly he said, "I played in Japan," and then it clicked. And we spoke, we spoke when he played in Japan in the first spring training with the Nippon Ham Fighters. And what I remembered about Andy Green was something he had done in AAA was fairly remarkable. It didn't mean anything over here, but it was a fairly remarkable number. He had triples. He had like a basket full of triples in 2006 in AAA, like a huge number of triples. And, you know, I see those things and they kind of stick in my mind. So I asked him about it and he said, "Oh yeah. Oh, I forgot about that." So I spoke with Andy Green and he said the same thing. He said, "You know, what did Japan do to you, or what did you bring back from Japan?" And he said, "I always prided myself on being the guy who worked the hardest on the field. And then I went to Japan and I found a whole country that worked harder than me."
Oh, that's a good line. Yeah. Yeah, that's excellent. All right. Well, I think Japan has taught a little bit about something to everybody who comes here and plays baseball. It's taught, you know, taught me to just be back, just to sit back and relax and watch and see what happens and not try to think too much about what what I think the manager should do. Yeah.
Yeah, that slippery slope, man.
Yeah.
No, that's the road to perdition right there. Thinking.
Yeah. All right. Well, the road to Yom Ruyiri for Luis Cruz making a two-seam transition was I guess a slippery slope for him, because he got basically released by the Chibolote Marines after winning a Gold Glove. He is joining the Yom Ruyiri Giants. That deal was announced recently. So now I don't really understand why Chiba let him go, other than I guess they wanted to give some of the younger players a chance to play, and they're cheaper. And, you know, Luis is over 30, and maybe they think they can't get any more out of him. So we're going to talk about some player acquisitions, and I want to start with Luis. And I think, you know, this is a really good pickup, I think, for the Giants, in that they'll have someone who probably, you know, at 30-something, probably will play most of the season there and will be very productive defensively. And while he didn't hit very well, he was productive in terms of RBIs. So if they get guys on, I think he can knock them in.
Mm. Well, I think I'm going to mention a year. You're going to have a little trivia question here.
And oh, trivia. I remember that from 2013.
That's right. Well, 14. This is, I'm going to say the number is, the year is 2006. The category is Giants second baseman.
2006, Giants second baseman. What the question is, how many?
No, the question is, the question is, what year did the Giants not bring in a new starting second baseman? What was the last year the Yom Ruyiri Giants did not bring in a new second baseman? And the answer is 2006. Basically, every year the Giants sign a guy who is going to be their next second baseman.
Who's on second?
Exactly.
I don't know. No.
Wow. And the parade started in 2007 with Luis Gonzalez.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And it's been who's.
Then it was Edgar Gonzalez. And then it was Jose Lopez.
Who they put at first.
Yeah, and then Rusty Ryle and Yasuyuki Kotoka.
Every year there's a new guy.
Yeah, it's pretty much. Actually, I think I got Luis Gonzalez, and he was there for 2 years, and I think I mentioned him. But
I think I don't know. We'll see what happens with Lotte. I guess they want to probably use Shogo Nakamura a lot more, and maybe he'll get the chance to play second base. Who knows where they're going to play him? But
maybe they'll take Daichi Suzuki and put him at second base.
You know,
no, we know that's not going to happen because that's not part of the. Or we think that's not going to happen because right. The reason for having Suzuki play short is because he's the captain, which is why Derek Jeter played short.
Yep.
Because he was the captain. It was not, you know, and he didn't look bad enough that they had to move him.
Yeah. So I think Cruz is going to be an asset for the Giants.
Yep.
And he'll be able to help out new skipper Yoshinobu Takahashi. That's going to seem weird the whole time I'm saying that on the show next year, but I'll get used to it. But I don't know. Well, I'm just hoping that, I mean, I think Cruz is going to hit well in that stadium, in that park. He'll be facing a different standard of pitcher in the Central League. He'll be in more hitters parks, Yokohama. Obviously, Tokyo Dome is still kind of hitter friendly for home runs to left field, I think. We'll have to see what your research digs out or.
Yeah, it's still a good place to go the opposite, you know, or to go to left, sure.
And he's going to play good defense for them. I mean, he's coming off a Golden Glove or Gold Glove season at second base. I think it's a good pickup as long as he's healthy. And he did have a couple, you know, soft tissue injuries last year, lower body. But I think he's all right. I think he's good for 120 games. And if he does that for them, he'll be very productive.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, they made the Yasuyuki Kotoka a free agent sign 3 years ago, and you put those two guys on the field, and you know, you say, well, okay, Cruz doesn't really hit for high average. I says, well, Kotoka doesn't know what average is or a walk. I have to be fair to Kotoka. He's one of these guys who's like he's just a mystery. He gets these little spurts of offensive activity, and he he reminds me, to be honest, and maybe this is not fair, but it seems that he's very much like Tsuyoshi Nishioka. He's a guy who, when all the buttons are pushed, is a really, really good player. He just can't seem to get all the buttons pushed all the time. He doesn't seem like he really cares enough. And that sounds harsh, but I don't know what to put a guy who's so talented who just doesn't seem to play very well so often.
Yeah, interesting. Now, some other player acquisitions. The Tohoku Rakuten Eagles picked up Toshiaki Imai.
Yeah, Gori.
And I guess that's kind of a meh kind of a move for me, but I think he's, you know, he's going to help them. He can play third. He can probably play first if they need that.
I think Genji Akamina is going to play first.
If he's healthy, yeah.
Yeah.
But
if he's healthy.
I think Imai can do some things around the infield in terms of amount. I just, you know, he hasn't been healthy. He's had that great first year, and then I don't think he's been that same player. I think that's why Lotte kind of decided that it's okay for him to leave. And
yeah, he has been playing a lot. So yeah, so Lotte's going to be kind of denuded around the infield, and they're going to be depending on Daichi Suzuki and Kazuya Fukuura
and
Iguchi, Tadahito Iguchi.
And the above, or the previously mentioned Nakamura, I think is going to get more playing time. And they did pick up Jason Standridge. They did pick up pitcher Jason Standridge from the SoftBank, and that's probably a good move for them.
I think so.
They needed some help in the rotation, and I think Jason's going to be good for them, or he's going to be sufficient for them. I think he's very serviceable. Now I want to talk about make a seamless transition to the guys who are going to the States.
Okay.
Probably. Nobuhiro Matsuda, he is still out there.
Yep.
I haven't heard anything. I haven't really even heard a lot of talk about him other than, you know, he's a Japanese infielder and there hasn't been. I wrote a blog post about how the infielders in past years haven't really been good in the United States for the Japanese infielders who have gone over there. And the track record is really bad, and it doesn't look like he's the guy to make it look better.
Well, the track record is bad. Well, first of all, we haven't really had a third baseman, right? So that's a new territory. And third baseman's a different setup than the middle infielders.
Definitely a middle. Different expectations for a player in a corner infield spot.
Sure. And interesting, you know, and you say that, but I think the issue has not been so much how good they are, but with how long they've been able to stay healthy. Although Kazuo Omatsu has to be the huge letdown. He was actually quite good in the majors after he got out of New York, but this is a guy. Kazuo Omatsu is a guy who was a good player, like Ichiro was a good player and Hideki Matsui was a good player.
Mm-hmm.
He was a player as good as them. And then he went to the America and he basically got booed out of New York. And it's not because he's the aforementioned Tsuyoshi Nishioka and he's not trying or he's not, you know, his motivation is, I don't know what, a mystery. I don't want to say questionable. I don't question people's motivation, but it's a mystery. I don't know if I could figure it out.
Yeah.
So Matsui was a big issue, but he did become, oddly enough, he did become a very, very, he was one of the National League's better fielding second basemen after he moved to Colorado. Mm-hmm. People didn't recognize this, and the same with Akinori Iwamura, who had almost never played second base as a professional.
Right. That was a big change. But I was talking about more recently. I was thinking of the Hiroyuki Nakajima failure, the Kensuke Tanaka, who didn't play
very
much.
I don't know if we can call them failures because they didn't have really chances.
Well, they didn't earn chances. That's failing.
That's fair enough, too.
Tanaka didn't get very much playing time. Munenori Kawasaki is an elevator guy. Just goes up and down. Between AAA and the major leagues, Tsuyoshi Nishioka didn't really get much of a chance because he got injured. I was talking about the guys in recent years, and that's the track record I'm referring to. Obviously, Iwamura played Matsui played, they were actually productive guys. I don't see them as failures per se. I'm talking about recently.
You're talking about failures as opposed to the success.
I'm talking about the recent guys. I think those are the big names who have gone over in recent years, and they've all come back with nothing really much to show for it, except for Kawasaki, because he's still over there.
Yeah, I guess that's true, because if your perception is that they're failures, we won't talk about the successes. So.
Well, who are the successes in recent years? I'm talking.
Oh, no, in recent years. See, you put that on there. Okay,
well,
so
of course.
I try to, keep look at the broad picture here. Okay. So, yeah, in recent years, it has been tough, and there was some talk about that Peter Greenberg, who is Nobuhiro Matsuda's agent, said that that's a motivating issue for him. He wants to be the guy who can break the mold. And I don't see that happening, but he certainly has the athleticism to do a variety of things. And there is talk about him. Interestingly enough, when Hiroyuki Nakajima was posted and the Yankees almost by accident won the posting bid, mm-hmm. under the old system, they said, "We want you basically to play every day at different positions. We want you to play second one day, and we'll want you at short sometimes, and because the guy out there, we don't know how long he's going to be able to stand, and third base, we also got an older guy out there, so we want you to play around the infield." And he said, no, "I'm a shortstop."
Yeah.
And that was the end of that deal.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, it's like quarterbacks in the NFL. If you have two, you have none. And it sounded to me as if his agent was speaking to guys who've done some scouting reports on Machi, and they're not confident he'll be able to hit for power at a corner infield spot. So they're starting to say, well, he's got other positions.
No, I don't think that's the case. I
really?
Mean, that's what it might sound.
Because, I mean, the outfield, I mean, him playing, and you said the athleticism. I agree with that. He has some athleticism, but I don't, he played every game last year at third base. I don't really see the athleticism to actually go out and start playing in different parks in the United States, because they all have their little quirks and they're all different. I just don't see him being an everyday outfielder.
I don't see that.
Team. So
I do see him playing regular, quite a lot at third. I could see him easily making the transition to second. I could also see him playing some shortstop, and I think that was not the agent's issue, but I think that was one of the teams basically doing a Yankees Nakajima thing on him, saying, "What we want, what we see, is this guy can play different roles."
Really? Wait a minute. Shortstop in the big leagues, Matsuda?
Sure.
I don't see that kind of.
I don't see it either. But I think he could play it. You wouldn't want him to play it every day, but if you needed him to play it for, play it for a game or a couple of innings, the difference probably wouldn't kill you.
Okay, a couple of innings. Yeah, I wouldn't want that any day. I mean, if I'm a manager, but in a pinch, in a serious pinch.
Sure not. He'd probably catch. And here's the difference: is when that issue came up with Nakajima, and I don't recall his agent, it was no, and no way.
Yeah.
And don't even tell me you ever said that again. And with Monster, it was like, well, if that's what it takes, that's what I'll do, which is what I really like about Matsuda.
Yeah.
He's going to – and my belief about him is that he can play in the majors and he can be a good player in the majors because of his attitude.
Yeah, I know you've always liked him. I remember we had a discussion about him a long time ago in the
office. I liked his minors. Yeah, I liked his the minors.
Right. Yeah, I know. Well,
But that's the thing I think he's got going for him, and I don't think that's the agent. And when Peter Greenberg said that, when his team said, "We think he can play a lot of positions," Matsuda's response was, "Wow, they think highly of me," not "they think poorly of me as a third baseman." They think highly of my versatility and what I can bring to the – see, that's the difference between Hiroyuki Nakajima and Nobuhiro Matsuda.
It's all about perspective.
And the hair.
It's all about perspective, I see. So, I can play other positions means they like what I can do.
Exactly.
opposed to, oh, no, they're trying to uproot me.
Yeah, exactly. It's they're not knocking, you know, if you're going to do something, you know, go for the best thing and not focus on what people are telling you you can't do.
Yeah, a long time ago, Alonzo Powell told me the same thing, a similar thing. He says, hey, somebody said your name in a trade. You should think, oh, wow, somebody really thinks that well of me that they're willing to send another guy over there to get me.
Yep.
So, okay. If that works. Now, we haven't heard anything about Kenta Maeda in particular, and we're probably not going to have a show for a while. Oh. Yeah. So I was asked a couple times, where do you think he's going to go? And the Iwakuma thing, the Hisashi Iwakuma thing yesterday, we had reports that the Dodgers were backing away from the table a little bit because they saw something in his medicals that they didn't like. And before you knew it, I tweeted it out right away when I saw it come across that the Seattle Mariners had re-signed him on a one-year deal, and whatever his problem was, they didn't care. At least
well, they
year.
Of course they had given him a medical before that too, a physical before that. And the other thing was the news about the Dodgers. I'm guessing that the news about the Dodgers was essentially released by Iwakuma's side in Japan. Essentially, the minute he had agreed to sign with the Mariners.
Aha, leverage play, you're saying.
Well, no, I'm just saying that the story, because it's what Jerry DePoto, the new general manager of the Mariners, said, you know, this situation over the past, as soon as we became aware of this situation over the past couple of days, this is basically the Dodgers news was basically 2 days old that leaked out. The Mariners had been trying to back looking for him for 2 days. It wasn't like he said, the Dodgers don't want me. The Dodgers don't want me. Okay, I'll come back. It was a case of, this is something that had been going on.
Right. Well, however it happened.
But the fact is that the news broke one after the other sounded like, man, he didn't take them long. You know, it was like, 30 seconds. Okay, I'm good.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously over here we have the time difference and all that stuff. So I know the cycle was a little bit longer than it seemed. But essentially, I think when the Dodgers thought they had this Japanese right-hander in their rotation and they don't, I think the play for Mayakan is going to get stepped up, I think.
Well, everybody's dropping off. And I think, you know, of course, the Dodgers care probably don't really care about price. You know, they don't shop at the 100 yen shop.
And they don't go to outlets.
They don't go to outlets. They buy them. They own them. They probably don't care. But I think Kenta Maeda is the fact that everybody's dropping out. Or I should say everybody's dropping out. But I think teams, actually, the price for Kenta Maeda is going to be such that teams that didn't think they were going to be in the market are going to be back in the market.
Well, I'm quickly going over some teams that I obviously the Dodgers, if he really wants to go to a West Coast team, Arizona spent a lot of money. The Giants have already spent a lot of money.
Hey.
The Padres might go for it, but I don't think
The Padres are basically no.
Yeah, I don't see Oakland. So I did see something about St. Louis mentioning that St. Louis needs pitching and might try to convince him to pitch in Middle America. I don't know how much. I think they need him. I think they can use him. But I think St. Louis, with the arms, the young arms they've always developed, I don't think it's a serious.
Thinking, you know, we were talking about this, or I should say we, people on the internet, were talking on Twitter about, you know, the price. And I think it seemed like, you know, $12 million a year for some number of years, 4 or 5 were the numbers that were going around. But I'm thinking right now that market's going to be down to about 8 or 9,
yeah.
Which means if we're talking like 4 years, we're talking about a very reasonably priced guy with a very good upside. You know, they're saying, oh, it's downside, but he also has a really nice upside. So I wouldn't be surprised at this point to see the Diamondbacks, who really did have an interest. You know, they weren't interested in signing him a week ago, you know, at $90 million, you know, spending $90 million, but they might be interested in him at $60 million.
With all the money they throw in at Greinke and
yeah,
and,
but sixth is a that's a you know that's a big difference, 30 million, 90 million to 60 million or 50 million or something in that ballpark.
I think with the acquisition of Miller, Shelby Miller, I think they're fine. I don't think they need to throw a lot more money at a guy
But that's the point, is that the teams that I guess that's the numbers issue, in that we've already got these guys. But yeah, obviously the Dodgers are the main team probably in the might akin, and they're probably thinking, well, we can get them for nothing now. I mean, we don't think that way, but you know, why not?
Okay,
we'll see how it feels to get a bargain.
We'll go for a bargain. Okay.
They don't wear sunglasses when they go into the store, so nobody recognizes them.
Okay, all right, and then a form seam transition. We have an American player from. Going from Japan back to the United States, and Tony Barnett, and he got a deal with the Texas Rangers, and great for him.
Yep.
I'm just excited to be able to get up and watch a game and maybe see Yu Darvish start it and Tony Barnett pitch at some point in the game and the Rangers win. I just think that'd be really cool.
That would be cool.
MPB guys collaborating on a big league victory would be really cool. One guy Japanese, one guy American.
Here's the funny thing. Tony in his press conference in Arlington said, I'm really a Japanese pitcher. And he says, I'm gonna be there with Yu Darvish, and like him, I'm a Japanese pitcher, except I don't have a Japanese name. And I'm thinking, well,
neither does Darvish.
Who holds an Iranian passport, you know?
Well, Yu has a Japanese first name, let's put it that way.
Right. Okay.
But the one thing I thought about Tony pitching in that park in Arlington, because that's been known as a hitter-friendly park, he's been working at a hit-happy park for 6 years as his home park in Japan. So I think he's used to it.
Yep.
And
he's used to seeing balls fly.
But it's interesting that, you know, no big league teams would take the posting bait. I guess they all just figured they could wait that out and save a little bit of money. Give that to a rookie coming up, a draft pick or something as a signing bonus.
Somebody you have to sign, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't a big surprise. There, you know, it's like, oh, there's a posting fee and he's a free agent? Okay, we'll just wait for the latter, you know. Oh, we're no rush. We're no rush to donate to the Swallows Scholarship Fund.
Yeah, so he's got a 2-year deal, $3.5 million, so that's good for him. And of course, we wish the best for him. We'll be watching. You know me, I'm always watching Major League Baseball games in the morning and MPB games at night, so it'll be fun to watch some Rangers games too.
It's a good thing they don't play baseball in Europe. You'd be really you'd have no sleep.
Right.
I should say they don't play base. They don't play at this level in Europe. Okay.
Well, they're not available on TV for sure, and I don't know the
guys. Yeah, no. Okay.
So now I know you caught up with Matt Merton while you were in Tennessee at the winter meeting. So what did you guys? What did you want to talk about?
Talk about? Well, yeah. Well, the news was, of course, the first news is which NPB team do you want to go to, and he was saying, well, you know, the interest in MPB isn't as big as I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned two teams. Well, he didn't mention teams by specific teams, but he mentioned that two teams had expressed interest in signing him. Mm-hmm. And I could tell you which ones those are. But he said his real interest right now is trying to go back to the majors,
mm-hmm.
which it really shocked me or surprised me.
Why is that?
Well, because basically.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
No. It's true, because basically what we do, or I should say what I do, is I look at a guy's numbers and I think MLB, NPB, MLB, MPB. You know, he did this here. He did. You know, he faced. This was. I think of contexts.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the discussion reminded me some of Charlie Manuel's, or I guess it preceded Charlie Manuel's and influenced how I spoke to Charlie. But he was talking about his swing, and he was talking about – basically he said that from his analysis of looking at video – and I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but essentially that his swing is so short. You know, basically, he has a Japanese swing, to be honest. I mean, he had a Japanese swing in the majors, which is how he could, you know, lead the Chicago Cubs in hitting as a 24-year-old, a short, little compact, you know, smack the ball swing. And that played out really well when he was 24. Now, of course, the issue for him is how it's going to play out for him when he's 34. And he said essentially the question for him from his point of view, hitting in the majors is the big question. I think there are other questions, you know, his arm and his speed and so on. But for him, the question is, can he still hit a major league fastball? And he believes that with his short stroke, he can. And he also believes that because the major league game is so much about, you know, hitting off the fastball, his experience in Japan will give him an edge in that because he's not going to have any problem adjusting the breaking pitches. But he said that what happened is now he should be able to crush breaking. You know, he should be a much, much, much better hitter at breaking pitches. He said he is a much better hitter at breaking pitches, which is what Japan does to you. Mm-hmm. It forces that you to develop that side of your game. And what he was saying was, you know, this is what happens when guys come here, is that they learn a completely different way of applying their skills. It's not that they become more talented, but they become more experienced. They become more resourceful. Because if they don't become resourceful, they don't play very long here.
Right.
So he was saying he thinks that lesson, and because of his short stroke, he can still hit a fastball at the major league level. And that because of that experience, he can actually, he said his skills right now will play better in the major leagues where there are more fastballs that he can just make contact on.
Mm-hmm.
And then he can, you know, build off of that by hitting every breaking ball they throw at him. Or at least, you know, being competitive on every breaking ball they throw at him. So that was his thinking. Now, I haven't spoken with him since then. He told me he was going to be talking to his agents after the winter meetings. So, you know, just to gauge the interest. And then if things don't work out in the States, then it'll probably be back to Japan.
Okay. All right. We'll be watching, Matt. Good luck, man.
Good luck. And thanks for the barbecue. It was a great lunch, man.
Oh, you're so lucky. Okay, one note. Oh San-hwan, the South Korean pitcher with the Hanshin Tigers, recently saw the team back away from negotiations with him. Now, he had been talking about a move to the States too, so I don't really know what was going on, but apparently he was involved in some kind of gambling, and in South Korea, from the reports I read, they don't take too kindly to that kind of behavior. They don't like gambling, even if you are off in a foreign country. And apparently he admitted to doing some gambling in Macau. So his status is murky at best at the moment. Hanshin backed away from negotiations there.
Mm.
If he's in trouble in Korea, I don't see him playing there. I don't know what his situation was with the United States or going to the majors or playing anywhere. I don't know. The story that I read said he was playing poker. So, and that Korea has strict laws against any kind of gambling, and he knew that. So, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I do know that the Tigers signed re-signed or brought back Kyuji Fujikawa, and he played in the Independent League this past season. So whatever that's worth, they got him. They also acquired a big pitcher named Marcos Mateo as a candidate to be the closer next year. So interesting things there. I mean, we've all talked about Pete Rose and we had some news about him not being reinstated in the major leagues, and he won't be affiliated with anything major league affiliated with the major league stamp on it officially, other than with Fox. I guess he's a commentator with Fox, but I don't know. I don't, playing poker in another country doesn't seem like a big deal to me, but if you know that your country, or you know, as a citizen of your particular country, that that's not allowed, especially as a professional athlete. And what I'm assuming is they say that the thought is if you get into a hole that you can throw games or help them help them facilitate earnings to repay your debt. So that's the issue. So they
that's how it used to work. That's, I mean, they've had match fixing issues in Korea, And they have had match fixing issues in Taiwan for essentially the same reason that kids who don't have any money find themselves mysteriously, suddenly and mysteriously in debt to these people who are buying their drinks to them.
Right. So, I mean, I don't want to judge the bylaws of another league and all that stuff. So, and I know virtually nothing about the KBO, but I would hope that at some point you can go back at least and pitch in Korea. But we'll see how that plays out for him. Not a good situation. Of course, you don't want to be involved in gambling, right, Pete? So,
yeah. To which he says, okay, I got odds on that.
And with that, let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first one comes from Stuart Miller, and it's a high heat question via Twitter. And he says, why do so many foreign players in MPB wear number 42?
Wow. Well, I don't know. I remember Alex Cabrera wore 42, and I don't know, maybe the new one will be 99. Wayne Gretzky. that's the one for the Venezuelan first baseman now, 99. Okay. No idea.
I went through and I saw that, yes, a lot of foreign players had the number 42, but this is more like an in-season question for me because we could go around and ask people, but since it's the off-season, we're not able to ask the players directly, or at least the guys who have 42. So I asked around. I asked a couple reporter friends I have, and one of them said that they don't think that they're really actually trying to honor Jackie Robinson, but that 42, and also 42 is a bad number in Japan because four means death, but actually if you read it, there's another way to read it, which is shini, which is also die and death, so that it's not a really good number for Japanese players to wear, but that some of them don't care and some more.
They don't care if the foreigners say die.
Right, they don't care the foreigners.
Hashtag high heat.
But I do recall for a fact that I talked to Mark Kroon when he was pitching, and he used to be the closer with the Yokohama Bay Stars and came to Yomiuri, and he wore the number 42 out of respect for Jackie Robinson for sure. There were a couple other players who wore the numbers. I don't know if it was because of Jackie Robinson or not, so we'll have to come back to this question sometime
Let's... Now that I just like brought up my database here and I'm looking for people who are wearing 42, and quite a lot of Japanese do, of course. And the one who I remember is Masao Kita, who's now an assistant to the general manager of the Nippon Ham Fighters, and he said he wears 42 because of Jackie Robinson also, and he's a bit of an outlier. Mm-hmm. I don't mean Jackie Robinson, but Kita is.
He went to the States to play, so
he did indeed.
He probably earned his appreciation.
But yes, but it isn't. It is true. A lot of foreigners are given 42, but not exclusively. Brian Bullington wore it. Tony Blanco. Lots of guys.
A lot of guys. Yeah. So
we
will come back to that question. Remind us, Stuart, if you will, during the season to ask around, especially if we can hit up some guys who have worn the number or who are still wearing the number when we get to the season next year. All right. All right. The next question is a wonderful MP3 question from Graveyard Ball.
Is it possible for NPB to have more expansion teams within the next couple decades? And if so, which prefectures or cities would be the biggest targets for expansion? And if not, why is it doubtful that we would be stuck with the 12 teams for the next 20 years or so?
Well,
expansion. Again, now we had a question about expansion. I thought it was earlier this year in 2015. I can't remember. I remember what I said, but I don't remember if it was this year or late in 2014. But go ahead, Jim. What's your opinion on it?
Well, I think expansion would be great. I think... Typically, there's vastly more baseball talent than they can use, but because baseball teams tend to be focused so often on what players can't do,
mm-hmm.
and on and they like to have, if you're the SoftBank Hawks, you know, I mean, the Hawks to be, I say this and I don't actually mean it to be true, but I don't think it's far from the truth that the SoftBank Hawks farm team could probably compete in the Central League.
Right. Yeah.
I think if they split off a couple of the first team guys, they'd finish ahead of the Bay Stars for sure. So, yeah, no, I'm not kidding. If, you know, if they had Uchi, you know, if Uchikawa,
yeah, you split off a few key players here and there, yeah.
Yeah, if you gave them two starters from the regular team, the farm team would probably win 55, 60 games in the Central League. They're really dominant. So there is vastly more. The thing is that there's always more talent than the teams are willing to be comfortable with. They're comfortable saying there's not enough players and not enough talent, but there is vast. The only reason that is the case is because there aren't enough jobs.
Right. Right.
It's analogous to, we can't, you know, Japanese baseball is going to crumble if we let the best players go to America, in which I think Michael Westbay was well ahead of the curve when he said, you know, what's going to happen is when the best players go to America, more players are going to be motivated to be the next best player.
Exactly.
And yeah. So we've got actually more talent since players have gone to America than before.
Yeah, it was an excellent observation.
I think that was one of the best I've ever heard.
My opinion on expansion is still the same as I said when we were asked this question before, and I said I just don't see it happening. I don't see any room for expansion in terms of the infrastructure. But before that, we have to look at how they would expand, and you have to expand by four teams. You can't have odd number of teams in the Central and Pacific League, so you'd have to bring in two in each league. So that's
great.
Four. Then you have to find locations. Now, there are some reasons some areas don't have teams, even though they might have some infrastructure.
I think
that's because it's hard to access.
I think that's, again, that's a matter of custom. Now, obviously, it also takes a long time to develop a fan base, but I think, yeah, these places could have teams. It's just a matter of, it's not the way we do things here. Just like forever, there were no teams in Sapporo. And for a long time, for almost 10 years, there were no team in Fukuoka. And Japanese baseball didn't see that as a problem.
Well, I mean, what I see is you need the infrastructure there. You need the population there. You need an existing industry and demographics and a whole lot of other things that probably Ivy League grads have a better grasp on than I do. But all those things need to be explored before you can actually place a team there. And then the team can help an economy and it can help an area, but it can't be the focal point because you have to have all these things there ahead of time. You have to be able to access it. You have to be able to have the population there who have an interest in baseball and can support the team.
Right.
And so I think all those things get...
And I think working against this in Japan is the notion that the people who are here, you know, there's just not a lot of interest in newcomers.
Right.
You know, like if you're competing, obviously Osaka could have more teams, Tokyo could have more teams. I could easily see, for example, a team in Niigata would probably work.
I could see another team in the Chubu area, the Nagoya, Aichi.
Sure,
area.
Another team in Nagoya. Why not?
Yeah,
another team in Nagoya. Let's say one team in Niigata, one team in Nagoya, one more team in Tokyo, one more team in Osaka. The problem is those teams would be – everybody would be going, well, why watch them? You know, we're stuck with – you know, we like our team. You know, getting new fans in an existing market is really hard in Japan,
right,
in these mature markets. So that would be very difficult, I think. What will be required is for the league to take a radically different stance and a radically different approach. I don't think it can't happen, but I think it's going to require a paradigm which we're not familiar with right now.
Yeah, you touched on areas that don't exactly have baseball or already have baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of the fact that we have Miyazaki, we have Okinawa as spring training areas, but they already have the facilities, they already have the population. They could easily have teams there in the regular season as well.
Well, Okinawa, it's just that everybody, well, of course, they'd be basically the next Sapporo and that everybody'd have to fly.
But it's still easily accessible if you just
true enough
plane. I think it's very doable. So if they look at it that way, and maybe Shizuoka perhaps,
I think you put
Miyazaki, Okinawa, Shizuoka. I think in the next 20 years, that's very doable. And that's if they were going to do something to change. And you said a paradigm that we're not familiar with. I think that's it. I think that they could go in that direction. I don't think they will.
Right. That's sort of like saying you don't see the earthquake coming. But we know earthquakes do happen.
And we know one's coming sometime.
So I wouldn't be surprised that it does happen. I just don't see how it's going to happen. Right. But I think it will eventually. There's too much logic to it. There's too much illogic holding it back.
And there's a lot more baseball. You know, I think if you take some of these indie league teams and just transplant them, I think it's doable. I don't see it happening soon.
Okay.
But 20 years, that's a long time.
Yep.
Very long time. All right. Thanks so much for the questions, guys. And this is the last show of this year. We will talk to you in the new year. We don't even know when yet. Probably 3 weeks from now. But we'll have to see once I get back from vacation. I'm going to be leaving for San Bernardino today, actually. This is Saturday in Japan, so I'm taking off and going back home.
And going back in time, as we do when we travel to the States. You'll leave Japan at 6 p.m. and arrive at 10 a.m. the same day.
That's right. Love it. Love it. All right, so Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to everyone, and we'll talk to you in 2016. Thanks a lot, Jim. Thanks a lot for the interview and everything you did. Thanks.
Hey, well, thank you for the year, and I feel like I should be singing Jingle Bells or something, but I know that won't fly, baby.
Well, don't sing Jingle Bells for a guy who's going to be dashing through the weeds in San Bernardino.
Okay, dude.
All right, guys, enjoy your holiday season.
Yeah, Merry Christmas and all that.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.